and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about something that Annie has been very excited to get into.
That's right. It's Vegemite.
Oh, and it rhymed even. And we may or may not have a section on Tim Tams because we're just doing a whole Australia-themed thing right now.
Yeah, and I love Tim Tams, and I just couldn't wait. I couldn't wait.
I still don't necessarily know what a Tim Tam is.
By the time we do this, you will. By the time it publishes, I mean, we're doing it currently.
Well,
but I am on the search for Tim Tams that don't cost 12 American dollars. And we will be partaking in a Tim Tam slam, which I will explain at a later time in this podcast.
Excellent. All right. But first, Vegemite. Also, thanks to listener Corrine for suggesting this topic.
Yes. And I told her we were doing it a long time ago. So sorry for the wait. And she was so excited about it. So hopefully she's still excited about it. So what is Vegemite for people who don't know? It's an Australian product that is a brown-colored spread made up of vegetables, like celery and onion, spice additives, and leftover brewer's yeast extracts. Sounds so good, right?
Actually, it kind of does. It's very, very strongly flavored.
Yes.
It's rather known for that.
Mm-hmm. Going off of that, I learned when I was in Australia, there's a, for the most part, agreed upon right way, quote, to eat it.
Because it's about the same consistency and thickness of like a peanut butter kind of thing, except it's very salty.
Very. So salty. So if you want to do it in this right way, you spread a thin layer of it on buttered toast or crackers. Sparingly. That's the key. Because it's so salty. You want to scrape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the jar should last a long time in theory.
Huh.
You can get a little more fancy, sophisticated, and add cheese and avocado. But I found that I enjoyed it this way.
Just plain?
Yeah.
Buttered toast Vegemite?
I do love buttered toast anyway. But Vegemite, my experience before I went to Australia, I did find it a little too salty. But when I went and I learned this method, I did enjoy it like this. So take that for what it's worth. I don't know. Have you ever had Vegemite in Australia? I called you.
Wow. I have. I think that we tried some. Ben Bolin and I tried some on the live show snack stuff once. And I don't think either of us. We did more like a dollop. Than a spread.
Sure.
And so that was quite a bit.
That's a high concentration.
Yeah. It tastes, if you've never tried Marmite or Vegemite, Marmite is a British version of it, or perhaps the original version.
Yes.
It tastes a little bit like stale beer.
Yeah.
Like vegetative, stale, salty beer.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound good,
but
I can see where it certainly is an acquired taste. People get really into it. There's something kind of comforting and like that like bready, yeasty sort of flavor that you get.
I recommend trying it, but in small amounts.
Yes.
And it's got a lot of vitamin B.
Like a whole lot.
Like a whole lot. 5-gram serving of Vegemite takes care of 25% of your daily recommended intake of riboflavin and niacin. And 50% of the recommended amount of folate. The color is natural. It's vegetarian, mostly fat and sugar-free, but it's not gluten-free. And also, it's certified as halal and kosher. So that's relatively healthier than I would have guessed by the taste. Australia produces 22.7 million tubs of Vegemite a year, or about 235 a minute.
Ooh.
Yeah, most of this is consumed in Australia. 30 jars stay in the country per every one exported.
Okay.
And according to What's Cooking America, Vegemite is in 9 out of 10 Australian pantries.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. There are also British, as we said, German, Swiss, and New Zealand versions of yeast extract products. Marmite Senevis, Vitam R, an Australian competitor called Promite, a non-vegetarian but similar tasting spread called Bovril, etc.
all of these names do not sound necessarily like a food product to
right?
me.
Yeah, Bovril is because it contains some like cow something
yeah,
something.
Sure.
Bovine, Bovril, I don't know.
Well, none of them sound...
It's very harsh. Like every, it's all very...
Yeah.
Like you're going to get your vitamins whether you like it or not.
It's an interesting theme for yeah. sure. The recipe, which is secret, has stayed for the most part the same since its invention. The biggest change was reducing the salt from 10% to 8% in 2014. Also, as of 1999, you can purchase it in tubes. I'm envisioning similar to Go-Gurt. And for a brief time that same year, Australians could buy...
Oh, sorry, I'm just over here shaking my head at the idea of Vegemite-flavored Go-Gurt. I'm back. No, okay.
You can... It's so that you can travel with it easily. You've got some...
Of course.
...ready to go. For a brief time that same year, 1999, Australians could find Vegemite-flavored Kraft singles.
Like cheesy Kraft singles?
Yeah.
Okay.
In what was an attempt to capture the flavor of cheese and Vegemite sandwiches in one Kraft slice. Didn't work out. They tried again to harness this combo in 2009 in a jarred spread called Cheesy Bite. I put an exclamation point at the end, and I guess that's because I was excited about it, but maybe the product has an exclamation point.
I can't remember.
But thanks to the mild flavor, the sales have been mildly successful, and you can still find it in stores today. The collaboration with Cadbury Chocolates, however, and yes, you heard that correctly, it didn't work out as well. The Guardian's review described the taste like, quote, licking a plate where Vegemite was smeared many months ago, then left in the sink to fester.
Yep, Vegemite-laced chocolate. It was a thing that they did on purpose.
The very, very narrow window for success there.
I get the concept, like
yeah.
salted chocolate I love, but...
Yeah. But a Cadbury egg.
But oniony. Oh, I don't think it was a Cadbury egg. It was just a...
Oh, I thought it was like
Cadbury
a,
chocolate square.
I thought it was an egg.
No.
With the Vegemite.
With the no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's a whole different thing.
Okay. All right. Well, then that's slightly better than what I was imagining. Still, didn't work out. In 2011, President Obama caused a bit of international kerfuffle when he told Australia's Prime Minister Julia Gillard he found Vegemite horrible.
And that's because there's a very deep Australian emotion about Vegemite.
Yes. It's kind of become a product that represents Australia and also invokes a sense of nostalgia for a lot of Australians. In Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's 2007 campaign, he described himself as a toast and Vegemite sort of guy. In 2012, the BBC wrote that Vegemite was as symbolic of Australia as Sydney Harbour Bridge and the koala. But this was not always the case.
No, certainly not. But before we get into the history,
yeah.
I wanted to get into the science of this yeast extract that Vegemite is made of.
Yeah.
So, what is it? Well, we've talked a bunch about yeasts as they're used in the fermentation process for beer and wine, but we're not actually talking about microorganism poop today.
Oh.
No, we are talking about microorganism guts.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
Uh-huh. So Saccharomyces cerevisiae is a species of yeast, you know, a type of fungi, that eat sugars, such as the sugars in wheat or grapes, and excrete ethanol. They're sometimes called brewer's yeast or baker's yeast because they're used in those industries. And they are single-celled organisms. So they consist of a cell wall holding in a nucleus and all kinds of proteins and sugars and fatty acids and other stuff that get the work of living done within this cell. One of the keys to brewing beer is to get a population of yeast to just go absolutely hog wild. And that is the scientific term. You want to take a relatively small yeast colony, low cost, it's cheap for you, and give it the opportunity to thrive and multiply, just budding out lots and lots and lots of other yeast cells that will all go to work converting sugars to alcohols. When they've converted about as much sugar to alcohol as they're gonna, you siphon off the beer, and you're left with two waste products, the solid barley and hops and whatever that yeast was feasting on, and a dying colony of yeast cells. In the industry, this is called spent yeast, so that we all feel less like we're committing genocide every time we brew a batch of beer.
Oh, I didn't feel like that until you said it.
Oh, sorry about it. Yay! Ooh. Everything dies. Oh. Okay, so you can separate out the solid waste from the spent yeast. Some breweries, by the way, recycle their barley and hops in interesting ways. You can totally go buy beer, barley, granola bars, and stuff like that. Or it might go to farms for mulch or animal feed. But, okay, so the thing about yeast is that its cell walls are sturdy. So if we're going to take yeast and eat it, it's not that easy for our bodies to digest, and it's not particularly flavorful.
Hmm.
Until you rip its guts out like you're Negan.
Just like that? That's how you have to do it?
It's a little bit less dramatic than
that. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So to get to the tasty, nutritious stuff that's in yeast cells, you have to break down their cell walls. This is what goes into making that yeast extract. And luckily for us, there's a process built into cells in nature just to accomplish this very cell wall breakdownage thing. It's called autolysis, meaning self-digestion or self-decline. And so when a cell is infected or injured and therefore has stopped certain processes of life, enzymes in the cell can kick in and kill it off and start breaking down the cell wall. This is useful in colonies of single-celled organisms and in multi-celled organisms like humans as well, because it releases the cell's components for uptake and use by other cells around it. And it can sometimes help prevent the spread of disease in cases where, like, a germ has hijacked the cell for its own nefarious germ purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can accomplish autolysis in a yeast population by either just waiting or by adding salt to dehydrate the cells and induce the death process. Other stuff could be used, too. For example, you could add a hydrochloric acid, kills lots of things,
yeah.
Which you later would neutralize with sodium hydroxide. But both processes, though, mean that the final product will be salty.
Like Vegemite?
Like Vegemite. I'm not actually sure about Vegemite. Their formula is very secret.
Yeah.
But Marmite has come out and said that it, in addition to salt, it adds some enzymes to its dying yeast to help kickstart the process. But once autolysis has done its work, you just kind of filter out the sloughed off cell walls and yay, you've got yeast extract.
Woohoo.
For Vegemite and or Marmite, you then kind of simmer that down into a paste and add whatever other ingredients you want. So that is the process of yeast extract. And the strong, savory, like kind of almost bouillon-like flavor that these spreads have comes from one of the molecules that's released during this process called glutamates, which are molecules found in proteins released during autolysis. Glutamates are also found in high concentrations in stuff like Parmesan cheese and soy sauce.
Oh.
Hmm. In Marmite's case, again, I'm not sure about Vegemite, but I suspect it's the same. They source their spent yeast from different breweries that make different amounts and types of beer. So the exact strains of yeast that end up in each batch will differ. This means that each finished batch may taste slightly different.
Oh, that's kind
Marmite
of funny.
Says that a keen palate can totally identify it.
Oh, so like a sommelier, but for Marmite.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Oh, yes. So fun side note. Although autolysis isn't generally welcome in beer brewing or in winemaking, it's actually what gives some white wines their characteristic flavors, like a sort of bready twinge. Like in champagne.
Yes.
Throwback to champagne. Mm-hmm. That's what resting champagne on its lees, a.k.a. the spent yeast, does. It induces autolysis and lets some of the molecules from the yeast guts get out and interact with the wine.
Yes. And in our champagne video, we talk about this briefly, and I bugged our animator Jay for weeks to make an animation about autolysis. so check that out if you haven't already. Online,
uh-huh.
In the virtual world.
Hmm. Somewhere out there, we're just gesturing to the space around
us. Yeah, we're just making arm gestures that you cannot see.
Works great on radio, folks.
Yes.
So speaking of working great on radio, let's take just a quick break right now for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So you might be getting this idea, but to talk about Vegemite, we have to first talk about Marmite.
Yes.
The two products are very closely related. Near the end of the 19th century, German scientist Justus von Liebig realized that when you took the yeast left over from beer brewing and concentrated it, it was totally edible.
Yay!
He added some salt, celery, and spices, and ta-da, Marmite.
Although yeast extract alone does have a bunch of vitamins and stuff, some extra B vitamins and other nutritional things that it's so popular for currently were added later as supplements.
Ah. Well, not wanting to waste any time, the Marmite Food Company started up a few years later in Staffordshire, England in 1902. I also saw the company listed as Britain's Marmite Extract Food Company.
Oh, goodness. It's very official sounding.
It is.
The word Marmite, by the way, is a French term for a type of large lidded earthenware pot. You can see a picture of that on the label of jars of Marmite.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, that's what the little pot on there comes for. The Marmite pot is named after a French stew made with a fish called Marmite or Marmite in French accent.
Insert French accent here.
Yes.
Pretty soon, Marmite was being shipped all over, including, you guessed it, Australia, where it enjoyed a popularity it didn't really find anywhere else, which I find kind of interesting. World War I, German U-boats really got in the way of Australia's Marmite crush, disrupting trade routes and preventing shipments of the stuff. So they needed to come up with their own solution.
Yeah.
Enter Cyril Callister, a Victoria native born in 1893. He was a chemist who spent a brief time working at a munitions factory in Scotland before an explosion had him returning to Australia, where he met entrepreneur Fred Walker. Walker had been searching for someone to help him come up with the Marmite alternative that Australia needed after the failure of something called Cubex.
Cubex?
Cubex. This was the product of a local brewer that's thickness and bitterness didn't turn any heads unless they were turning to spit it out, and resulted in quite the loss of money. So he, or technically his company, the Fred Walker Company, asked Callister to take a swing at a Marmite-esque spread in 1922, and after months of taste test and fine-tuning, Callister had a recipe ready to go by 1923. Wanting to get some publicity going, the Fred Walker Company launched a nationwide competition with a 50-pound prize to whoever came up with a name for the Callister's take on Marmite before it hit the shelves. Walker's daughter Sheila pulled the name out of a hat, and out of hundreds of entries, Vegemite emerged victorious.
I love that random chance.
I know. And now, here we are. By the time the newly christened Vegemite started appearing in stores, World War I had ended and people could buy Marmite again, which they did. So it's not the best timing. In an attempt to jump on the Marmite train and increase their earnings, the Fred Walker Company changed the name of Vegemite in 1928 to Parwill.
Okay, it's a pun.
Yeah.
And if you're confused, so were we.
That's always the sign of a good pun. Perhaps the slogan will help.
Yeah.
If Marmite, par will.
No.
Do you get it?
I do, but I don't want to.
Oh, boy. Yeah, most people didn't get it. And they changed the name back in 1935. Side note on this. This is the pun I was talking about if you follow me on social media. That is so bad. I'm not even sure I would make it. And that's quite a statement.
Oh, wow.
That's really saying something.
That is, folks.
And I thought about doing this in an Australian accent, but I figured it's just better not to.
Yeah.
It might make more sense in the Australian accent, though. I don't know. Anyway.
If anyone is from Australia and wants to send us a sound clip.
Oh, please
saying,
do.
If Marmite, par will.
Yeah.
Please do. We'll
please.
Air it.
Yes, we will. The product was advertised as delicious on sandwiches and toast and improving the flavors of soups, stews, and gravies. Meanwhile, Fred Walker, who was impressed with the invention of processed cheese that did not need to be refrigerated, had met the inventor of the product in Chicago in 1924, one James Kraft.
Kraft?
Yes, that Kraft. The two hit it off. And Walker convinced Kraft to allow him to sell the processed cheese in Australia. And, oh, yeah, why don't you take this Vegemite thing? We can market them together. Won't that be great? Yeah, let's do that. So pretty clever on Walker's part. Kraft and Walker established the Kraft Walker Cheese Company in 1926. And for 2 years, beginning with 1935, a purchaser of any Kraft Walker cheese product received a coupon to redeem for one free jar of Vegemite. And this actually proved to be a pretty smart move. Vegemite became more well-known by the mid-1930s.
1935 was also the same year that Fred Walker passed away, and thus Kraft officially acquired controlling interest in the Vegemite brand, and the manufacturing methods behind Vegemite fell into their hands as well. Kraft's company owned and made Vegemite until 2017, when it was purchased by an Australian dairy company called Bega. So thus finally became a national product again.
Yeah.
Oh.
Huzzah.
Yeah.
In 1937, another competition brought even more publicity to Vegemite. This competition was a poetry competition. A limerick, to be exact. And the prize was a Pontiac.
Ooh.
I wonder if you can find those limericks anywhere. Anyway, in 1939, there was another game changer in part brought on by the Vegemite hubbub caused by this limerick competition. The Australian government commissioned University of Adelaide human physiology professor Cedric Stanton Hicks to do some research and make nutritional recommendations for keeping Australian soldiers healthy and full as they fought in World War II. Hicks concluded that the high content of vitamin B in Vegemite meant that it should be in soldiers' ration packs. World War II posters read, "Vegemite, keeping fighting men fighting fit." Wartime Vegemite came in three sizes. Platoon size of 7 pounds.
Whoa.
Yeah. 8 ounce individual tins and half an ounce for the soldier behind enemy lines.
Oh my goodness.
You'd never want to be without your Vegemite,
no,
I guess.
Certainly not.
Also, thanks to the war, Marmite once again became largely unavailable in Australia, which only helped Vegemite's growth.
Ah.
The same year, the British Medical Association gave Vegemite their stamp of approval as a nutritious, balanced, vitamin B-packed food. They even printed advertisements for it in their own magazines. Doctors recommended it to their patients, even the baby ones.
Aw.
Yeah. Well, I guess. The Army bought so much of this stuff that it led to a civilian shortage and caused the Army to print ads like this one. Vegemite fights with the men up north. If you are one of those who don't need Vegemite medicinally, then thousands of invalids are asking you to deny yourself of it for the time being. It's not too catchy, but it does the job.
It's no limerick, but it's expressive.
No. Yes. When Cyril Callister died in 1949, the past and future Prime Minister Robert Menzies attended his funeral.
Oh.
By the time World War II drew to a close, Vegemite was an Australian staple. 1954 ad campaign further sealed the deal, featuring a group of happy, healthy kids singing what must have been a major earworm of a jingle called the Happy Little Vegemites that went as follows. "We are happy little Vegemites, as bright can be. We all enjoy our Vegemite for breakfast, lunch, and tea. Our mummy says we're growing stronger every single week. Because we love our Vegemite, we all adore our Vegemite. It puts a rose in every cheek." I avoided listening to this because everything I read said it was going to be stuck in your head.
Forever.
For
the rest of your life.
Yes. And speaking of the rest of your life, this campaign was courtesy of J. Walter Thompson, and it was so successful that what started as a radio ad transitioned to television and subsisted well into the 60s. Further, these commercials were made all beautiful and colorful and rebroadcast in the 80s, and then again in 2010, and furthermore, the original surviving cast of kids was tracked down for the 50th anniversary of an ad a couple of years ago. One of the stars said of the ad, "It may be just a commercial, but it will never die. I think it will be around long after we're gone."
Wow.
Yeah. So, if you're feeling adventurous and not afraid of an earworm, you can find it. You can find it in many different versions and colors. And,
apparently.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And then we get the band Men at Work song Down Under, which debuted in 1982 with the line, "I said, do you speak of my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich." Very hard not to sing it right there, but I resisted.
Good
You're
job.
Welcome.
Yeah.
A 66-cent jar of Vegemite made history in 1984 when it was the first item scanned in Australia at Woolworths.
In the 90s, the company converted a bus into a traveling toaster that could crisp up hundreds of bread slices at a single time.
That's amazing.
And they ran an April Fool's Day promotion in 2015, announcing that they'd be opening a museum in the shape of a giant Vegemite jar on site at their Port Melbourne factory.
Oh.
Totally didn't happen.
I know, but a part of me, they have to do it now. That's what I think.
They've generally been lauded for their successful, if non-traditional, methods of promotion by serious industry sources like Advertising Age.
Yeah, I would agree. They seem to have a lot of interesting competitions, and maybe the name-changing one was not great, but all the other ones
seem a lot to of other ones, yeah,
helped them in their success.
Really worked out. But Vegemite is not without controversy.
Nope.
And we will get to that after we take one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, Vegemite controversy. In 1973, Australia introduced a series of policies promoting multiculturalism, replacing the word multiculturalism with Vegemite on a poster with the slogan, "Spread it around." But multiculturalism, the set of policies, has been a source of both praise and criticism. Indigenous Affairs Minister Nigel Scullion called Vegemite a precursor to misery in 2015. And what he was talking about was indigenous communities with an alcohol ban that were using Vegemite to make bootleg alcohol, even bathtubs of moonshine. Sometimes the alcohol is mixed with orange juice, and adults and kids were apparently getting drunk on this stuff and then were too hungover to go to work or to school the next day. In the Northern Territory, indigenous people consumed 16.9 liters of pure alcohol a year in 2015 compared to the 10 liters of the rest of the population. The Sydney Morning Herald reported cases of up to 20 jars of Vegemite being purchased at a time for making alcohol. However, scientists dispute the actual usefulness of Vegemite when making alcohol, since the yeast is dead by the time it makes it to the jar, and at best, it might speed up the natural fermentation process.
A bunch of researchers have looked into this, and since Vegemite is made from yeast guts, it can be a source of nutrition for living yeasts that homebrewers would add, but you certainly can't. I mean, you kind of need another thing to kickstart it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless.
Yes, nonetheless. In 2015, research found that Indigenous Australians between 35 and 54 are 8 times likelier to die than the same age group of the rest of the population, with alcohol cited as the main cause. It was also found to be related to 40% of male and 30% of female Indigenous suicides.
So quite a big problem.
Yeah, and Scullion even suggested banning Vegemite recently, and it caused a bit of a stir.
As you might imagine.
Yeah. Dry zones, or areas that prohibit alcohol and fine people in violation, really only resulted in finding people that couldn't afford to pay, and then they racked up debt, and that sometimes landed them in jail, so not very helpful. And speaking of jail, Victoria banned Vegemite from prisons in 2007 to prevent inmates from using it to make alcohol.
Hmm. Speaking of illicit substances, the week that we were researching this, the last week in September of 2017, an Australian man attempted to smuggle drugs into a music festival past trained police dogs by covering the scent of the drugs with Vegemite.
I'm going to guess he wasn't successful.
No. Nope.
Nope. Okay. And just so you know, when I was in Australia, I was working in the Northern Territory with Indigenous people. I was trying to help document their language, and I did see some evidence of this problem, along with other things that we can talk about in other episodes. Well, just like the food that they had was very unhealthy, like the food they were getting from the government.
Sure, sure. The kind of food desert sort of problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, future episode.
Yeah. Yay. Future. I mean, important, but very
yes.
Sad topics.
Yes. But something interesting and not so sad in the science and health category. In 2015, Vegemite, which has a high ion and water content, was used to complete a circuit and turn on an LED light, similar to like what you would do with potato.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and the scientists working on this were looking at the possibility of edible medical sensors that would dissipate after collecting data from your body. Just pretty cool. I was going to make a joke about it, about how like a scientist doing this weird thing. But then I read what it was for, and I was like, well, that's actually really useful and interesting.
Yeah. Over on the show Forward Thinking, which is no longer in production, but yeah, we had a good couple years run on it. We got a chance to look into some of these edible medical sensors that they're working on, and we'll have to do an episode about it sometime.
Yes.
It's fascinating. And in terms of the health of Vegemite, it really is pretty good for you. Like Annie said earlier, it's fat free, has way more protein than carbs, and has lots of vitamins. The only thing to really watch out for is its salt content. You know, if you have a condition or a precondition in which you need to watch your salt intake, most healthy people don't really need to be too worried about salt as long as they hydrate.
Right.
Always hydrate, folks.
This brings us to Tim Tams.
And why are we talking about Tim Tams?
Why? That's probably a very legitimate and great question.
it's another Australian phenomenon.
Yes. And it was one of my favorite things that I discovered when I was in Australia. If you've never seen one, they're two malted chocolate biscuits with a light chocolate filling and then coated in chocolate.
And by biscuits, you mean cookies.
Yes.
What Americans would call
yes.
cookies.
In my U.S. tongue, I would say they're chocolate-covered wafer cookies.
Okay.
Yeah. But they don't have to be chocolate. No. There are a million flavors. Like cheese.
What?
There's a cheese-flavored one in Indonesia. Also, alcohol-flavored ones that caused a little bit of a stir for normalizing alcohol for children. And then this caused an Arnaud's spokesperson, Arnaud is the company that makes Tim Tams, to release this statement. Children would need to consume your body weight of biscuits every hour to reach a blood alcohol content of 0.05. Whew.
I can see the argument that you don't want to be like, oh, hey, kids,
eat this
whiskey-flavored stuff. Don't you love whiskey?
Don't you?
Especially this branded whiskey that I'm sure that we paired up with marketing-wise.
Right. And you probably will love it because it's really just chocolate, maybe with a little bit of whiskey flavoring.
Anyway,
according to Australian Food News, they're ranked as the world's most popular biscuit per capita.
Ah.
I couldn't find the source on this, but Australians alone eat 45 million of them a year, again, according to Australian Food News. One out of two households has a package of Tim Tams in Australia.
Huh.
Yeah. The Sydney factory produces 3,000 biscuits per minute, 20 tons of cream filling, and 27 tons of chocolate coating. As of 2008, you can buy Tim Tams in the U.S., distributed by Pepperidge Farms. Your best bet is Target.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I have seen them at Publix, but again, they were like $12.
Huh.
The company uses mostly Australian bakeries located in Brisbane, Adelaide, Sydney, and in 2009 invested $37 million for a spared-no-expense production line. American Campbell Soup Company purchased Arnaud's in 2011, but Tim Tams are still made in Australia. And the story of Tim Tams, briefly, it's short, everybody, starts in Newcastle, New South Wales, Australia, with the 1865 opening of Arnaud's. Skipping ahead to 1958, Arnaud's food technology director, great title, Ian Norris went on what sounds like one of the best work adventures ever to find inspiration for the next great biscuit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. His muse turned out to be the British penguin biscuit. He returned to Australia determined to improve on the penguin. He named his creation after the 1958 winner of the Kentucky Derby, Tim Tam. By 1964, the Tim Tam was on Australian shelves, and from there they spread across the continent and then the globe. And there's even a tradition of sorts called the Tim Tam Slam, which I did a couple of times, maybe more than a couple. This is where you bite off opposite ends of the biscuit, and then you use it as a straw for a hot beverage. Say, like hot chocolate, maybe with Baileys or some other alcohol. And the temperature of the drink causes the chocolate to become all melty and delicious. Oh, it's so good. Lauren, we have to do it.
Oh, okay. I'm down. The weather is changing. I'm
yes.
excited about Tim Tam slamming.
Yes, it's time for a Tim Tam slam on food stuff.
It's time.
Yes. Kate Blanchett was in a 1991 ad for Tim Tams, and Taylor Swift is reportedly a big fan. Okay, so that's my Tim Tam sidebar. I had to do it. It's like not even a choice.
Yeah, no, I believe you. But yeah, that's what we have to say about Vegemite and Tim Tams. And thus, we come to listener mail.
Listener mail.
That was kind of a spooky listener mail.
I know. Well, when we're recording this, the season is all, you know, Halloween-y and everything.
It's true.
Yes. Emily wrote, The recent mail you got about eating at McDonald's in France reminded me of my dad's story of his trip to Slovakia. In the early 90s, my dad's work sent him on a six-month trip to the newly non-Soviet separated from Czech Slovakia. He soon found that because of the poor conditions in Soviet countries, the most consistent food Slovakia had was cabbage and pork. Every meal had pork and cabbage. My dad was so delighted to see steak and eggs on a breakfast menu, but when it arrived, he received a slab of beefsteak with an egg on top, but in between there was a slab of pork steak. And, of course, a side of cabbage. He and his colleagues became so fed up, they traveled for hours, eventually getting to Hungary, just to go to McDonald's to get Big Macs.
Oh.
Finally, meat that wasn't pork and lettuce that wasn't cabbage. To this day, he refuses to eat cabbage, much to my mother's chagrin. Pretty soon, with all the mail we get about McDonald's in different countries, this is just going to be a McDonald's Around the World podcast.
Oh, I'd listen to that podcast, though.
Yeah, I think it could be pretty interesting, for sure.
Maybe that's the pitch for a travel show.
Maybe. Annie and Lauren travel the world eating at different McDonald's.
Oh, oof.
Yes.
My blood pressure just rose thinking about that.
That's true. Our health would decline, probably.
Yes. Randall wrote in response to our expiration dates episode, "My wife is objects conservator at the Museum of American History. Since the collection is so varied, she never knows what will come into the lab. A couple years ago, a few cans of World War II era hot dogs came down. She had to empty the cans for safe storage. She said that the hot dogs from the can looked as fresh as new ones. No bad smells or mold." So, yeah, canned foods.
Canned foods are pretty amazing.
Yeah. Technology.
Technology.
So thank you so much to these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write in, you can do that thing.
Yes. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at foodstuffhsw, and we are also on Instagram at foodstuff. We post there. You could get in touch with us if you'd like to. Like something, you know, give us that little ping of validation that drives our lives. We hope that we'll hear from you, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.